Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
I'm going to speak to Dr. Ali Salim in a few moments' time, who is from the Islamic Cultural Centre. But before I do that, and I'm sure Ali Salim won't mind waiting just a few moments, I want you to have a listen to the interview that was exclusive on Sky News with this young lady, which gives you a sense of where she's at currently at the moment. The audio is not great because this was indeed in a Kurdish camp, in a refugee camp. So have a listen very carefully to, I suppose, her feelings on the whole matter.
Was there a point where you started to have second thoughts about your life in Islamic State, under Islamic State?
Just only at the end, like after my son died, I realised I had to get out for the sake of my children, the sake of my daughter and my baby.
But you didn't have any regrets up until that point. What was it about Islamic State that attracted you? What did you like about it?
The way they showed how you can go, they'll take care of you, you can have your own family there, you can do anything. You're living under Islamic law.
Yeah. Did you know what Islamic State were doing when you left for Syria? Because they had beheaded people, there were executions.
Yeah, I knew about those things and I was okay with it. At first, because you know, I started becoming religious just before I left. You know, from what I heard, that Islamically that is all allowed, so I was okay with it.
You didn't question that?
No, not at all.
Okay. There's a struggle going on in the UK now at home about whether you should be allowed to come home or not. You know that, do you? Okay. What are your feelings about that?
I think a lot of people should have like sympathy towards me for everything I've been through. You know, when I didn't know what I was getting into when I left, and I just was hoping that maybe for the sake of me and my child, they let me come back.
Okay.
Because I can't live in this camp forever. Not really possible.
The head of the Foreign Intelligence Services in the UK says people like you are potentially very dangerous. What would you say to him?
They don't have any evidence against me doing anything dangerous. When I went to Syria, I was just a housewife the entire 4 years. Just stayed at home, took care of my husband, took care of my kids. I never did anything dangerous. I never made propaganda. I never encouraged people to come to Syria, so I don't really have proof that I did anything that is dangerous.
Okay. May I ask, what was it that attracted you? Was it from watching videos? Was there somebody who recruited you, or a cleric who recruited you? What was it that prompted a 15-year-old girl to go to Syria?
During the time I left, you know, Dola was on the news and stuff, and like a lot of videos were coming out, and I saw all the videos on the internet, and that just kind of attracted me to them.
Do you feel that you have made a mistake? Do you think you've made a mistake when you look back at what you've been through over the last 4 years?
A mistake in going back to going to Dola?
Yes, a mistake in coming here, living under Islamic State.
In a way, yes, but I don't regret it because it's changed me as a person. It's made me stronger, tougher. You know, I married my husband. I wouldn't have found someone like him back in the UK. I had my kids. You know, I did have a good time there. It's just at the end, things got harder and I couldn't take it anymore. And I had to leave.
Well, there you go. That's her own words. And I want to know what you think. You can text us or WhatsApp us at 087-188-0008. But should individuals who left Ireland, England, or anywhere in Europe indeed, to go to join the Islamic State, do you believe they should be allowed back into their countries of origins after what some people would say they have been radicalised? On the line is Dr. Ali Salim of the Islamic Cultural Centre. Ali, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon,
Miles. You've listened to the audio. I think it would be fair to say she clearly says she has no regrets. She said Islamically it was okay to execute people and behead people, and she's okay with that, and she still is okay with that. Is that the type of citizen that we want in our country, or indeed that the British want in their country?
Well, I think any citizen is entitled to return to his or her country, and if they're having a problem, well, then that problem has to be sorted out and sorted out in the right way. But it should not have any impact on their constitutional right of returning to their home country. Well, she has admitted in the very start that she was attracted to go to that place because she felt that place would provide her with the family atmosphere, and that place would give her a place where she can live under Islamic law. And, well, apparently,
I mean, she had that in the UK, surely. I mean, she had a father and a mother and a family in the UK and friends. So she would have had all that in the UK. What was so attractive? What do you believe during the caliphate was so attractive for her to go to Syria?
I believe she was... she didn't receive maybe quality Islamic education. I think, you see, the problem is having a social dimension out of what she is saying. The girl is she joined them only when she was 15 years old, which means like she was not in a position to decide for herself. On
yeah, but she's 19. She's 19 now, and she has no regrets. So her mind hasn't changed.
Yeah, no, but she's saying that she wants to go back to the UK, and she says that she can't take it anymore.
Well, no, she said she wants to go back for the sake of her child. She's already lost two children to malnutrition, so she wants to go back for the sake of her child. Now, she doesn't know where her husband is, but I believe her husband is actually Dutch, and he has, well, we don't actually know. He either wants to return to Holland or he's already back in Holland. We don't actually know where he is. She doesn't even know where he is. But she sees nothing wrong with ISIS and the practice of beheadings and executions. I mean... She's clearly been radicalized, Ali.
Well, of course she has been radicalized, no doubt about that. You see, but does it mean that we have to cut her off from her society, or does it mean that we have to rehabilitate, you see?
But we have a duty to protect the citizens of a country, just like Ireland has a duty to protect our citizens. Okay. And why would you invite somebody back to a country who clearly has no issue whatsoever with essentially what is terrorism? I mean, has absolutely no regrets.
Well, I tell you, Philip, you see, if we are excluding every citizen in whatever country because of their criminal behavior or ideological problems, then it means that there is no need for courts here, there is no need for jails here. We have law here that has to be in practice. People who are having problems of similar nature and others, they are entitled to go back home, and then they should be judged according to the law of the country that they come from. However,
well, that doesn't necessarily happen all the time. We have Irish people who commit crimes abroad and end up going to jail abroad. So that we necessarily don't always bring people home to serve a sentence. And Ben Wallace, who is the Secretary Minister of the UK, said it's worrying that she hadn't expressed any regret about going to Syria in the first place. He said it's worrying. I mean, when you've got a Secretary Minister saying something like that, it's concerning, isn't it?
That's right, you see. But the question will be how to deal with this situation. The way I'm thinking of it is not how to treat the problem. But you see, prevention is better than cure. I would bring people like that back home and I would learn from their experience.
Should you put them in jail?
No, well, the law has to be applied. Like, they have to be brought to justice. The judge will have to decide where these people should go. But I
mean, if you're a member of the IRA in this country, just for being a member of the IRA, you will go to jail. I mean, surely in this particular instance, and we have many Irish people, one of whom actually has already announced that he wants to come back to Ireland. I won't go into the names of the individuals, but there are many other Irish as well, possibly in this group of 800 people, who Donald Trump, by the way, probably the one time you might agree with him, Ali, has said they should be returned to their own countries of origin to face the law. I mean, basically, I mean, we have laws against this. We have laws against being a member of an organisation that's not recognised, and that's an organisation that's responsible for terrorism.
Well, perfect. If we have laws against them because of joining this organisation, we'll then bring them here and judge them according to the law. However, I think bringing them back is a very positive point because it will give us a better insight. You and I, likewise, others, we don't have the experience of living with people who act in this way, but having a person coming back to us, I think we'll be having an eyewitness and we can talk to them more and get ourselves enlightened about
Do you feel sorry for her? Because she said, by her own admission, she would be hard to rehabilitate. She actually admits that. She says that it would be hard to rehabilitate her.
Well, I wouldn't take a word. You see, like, people who are having the psychological problems, the people who are having, like, you see, they always believe that they don't know what can happen to them. Like, I think her problem, more or less, is a little bit of being unaware Islamically. I think the problem has social dimension. I think the problem has ideological dimension. The people who are qualified in a number of areas, and I think all these people need to come together and share a discussion with this poor girl. I really feel that poor girl, you see, like, she's not,
Ali, where do you see this poor girl? She's 19 years of age and clearly sat there listening to an interviewer saying, you know, were you aware that people were being beheaded and executed? And she said she had no issue with that. So, I mean, to suggest she's a poor girl, I mean, she believes that Muslims should live under Islamic law. I mean, this in itself goes against the teachings of the Quran, does it not?
Well, if I were the person talking to this girl, for example, and if she said that, I would ask her a simple question. What does Islamic law mean? How do you understand it? What do you know about it? You see, like, there are a lot of people who will be just throwing words like that, and they don't really understand what they are saying.
You tell me, Ali. I mean, you study the Quran. I haven't studied the Quran, but I know from talking to different people on the air, and different Muslims and scholars, that they've clearly told me that no matter what you feel and how serious you take your religion, that Islamic law is superseded by state law, according to the Quran. That the Prophet Muhammad said this himself.
Well, if you live in a country, well, of course you accept the laws of the country. And, you know, the law of the country that you live in, I don't think it, like, me living in Ireland, for example, you see, it does not mean that I'm not adhering to Islam, because basically...
Yeah, but you do adhere to the Irish laws.
I do, of course, because it does not contradict my religion. For example, if it comes to alcohol consumption, we Muslims are not allowed to drink alcohol. I don't think the Irish law would make it an obligation.
But that's different. That's different. You're not breaking the law by not drinking alcohol. I don't drink alcohol either. So you're not breaking the law by not drinking alcohol, but you are breaking the law by condoning executions and beheadings, or because you believe it's, as she said in her words, it's Islamically right.
Well, that's what I'm saying to you. You see, there is a need for a better education about issues like that. You see, like, how much has she studied about Islam to come up with a conclusion like that? You see, how
she said she watched videos on YouTube.
But that's the problem now. When people are educated by YouTube, when people are educated by Google, then that would lead us to a disaster. You see, we need people who are really educated in Islamic institutions, who have better understanding, who know what they are talking about, and they cite from here and cite from there. And I think a person like that, the first step that we have to do to her in order to rehabilitate and also help her is to get her seated with an Islamic scholar who can argue with her Islamically about whatever conviction she is having.
But her own father is a preacher. I mean, from what I believe, and I was reading online, her own father is a preacher and has been accused in the past of radicalizing people with his preachings and the way he teaches.
I don't think a family member would help, even if he's a scholar. You see, like, I think as somebody not from the family, you see, would be a better preacher to her, and would, as he's saying, could be more accepted as well. I think, like, the first thing is to treat her from a religious point of view, and then look into the social problems that she is having, and get her immersed into various social activities, and let her feel that life has a meaning. You could be this, you could be that. You're going to be a mother now. What kind of life you want to pass to your children? Mm-hmm. A lot of things that you can bring onto her table that will definitely change her direction completely change her perception about life.
But are we in danger if, for example, you know, a woman like this, or the Irish people who want to come home, of creating another Anjem Chowdhury, for example, who has spent some amount of time in the UK in jail for the way he preaches and the way he radicalises and his views on Islam? Are we likely to be creating more people like that who in turn, I mean, she has, you know, a young son who, you know, she could raise with resentment for the West, you know, because we can clearly see the way she thinks.
Well, we can, as you say, the way to handle that, prevention is better than cure. And the first step in prevention is that we have to be really selective in terms of the terms that we apply when we talk about ISIS, for example. We never describe them as Islamic State. Muslims do not describe them as Islamic State, but the Western media classify them as Islamic State. That is very much appealing for a 15, 16-year-old Muslim who is not, like, they are not in a position where they are aware of what is right or what is 100%.
But she doesn't even accept that the caliphate is over. You know, she said they don't think, I don't think they deserve the victory. So she doesn't accept that it's over.
Okay, now, well, if she said that to me, then I'll be asking her, what do you mean when you say the caliphate? What does it mean? If the caliphate is going to be something peaceful, if the caliphate is going to achieve justice, if the caliphate is equality, and that is for everybody, Muslims and non-Muslims, if you accept that justice and equality, fair treatment for all people, you see, and not only people of one faith or particular race, that's what we are asking for. Everybody wants this for everybody. You see, like, you can definitely take her down this line and explain to her that is the exact Islamic teaching. This is what Islam invites people to do. See, like, if she says something like this, and then we just call to her saying from the Prophet Muhammad, who said that you all come from Adam and Adam was created from dust, no superiority is to be claimed by an Arab over an Arab or over white over a black. Now, how do you see this in light of what you are claiming? And you put her on things like this, and if you put her against the brinker verse from the Quran, where it says that transgress not, surely God loves not the transgressors. Put her to another place in the Quran where it calls unto people to live in peace, harmony. Put her into another place in the Quran where it states clear that the nearest in-law to you are the Christians.
But she's still living in this caliphate where she believes that everybody apart from Muslims are unequal. Everybody should pay extra taxes, of course, unless they're Muslim. And anybody who dares leave Islam should be sentenced to death. So she's still living in that world.
You see, the problem is when they use the term caliphate, you see, they definitely gain the affection of Muslims. But that's fine. There's nothing wrong with the caliphate. But now, what you attach the caliphate is on, when the time when the Muslim caliphate was leading the world, the Christians, Jews, and people of no faith lived under the Muslim state, enjoying equality and freedom of religion and freedom of practice. During the rising of the Muslim caliphate, when Muslims went to Egypt, in Egypt, there exists the most ancient Christian monastery still until now. In Palestine, Muslims entered Palestine during the time of the second Muslim ruler, which means shortly after the death of the Prophet Muhammad. Until today's time, there are churches that predate the coming of Muslims to the land of Palestine, which means that during the rise of these Muslim caliphates, people of all faiths and no faith did exist together in peace.
Okay, well, so one final question. You believe that anybody, these 800, they reckon in and around 800 people who are currently in one of these camps at the moment, or these camps, the Kurdish camps, they should be allowed back into their countries of origin, no matter what they've done?
Yes, they should be allowed.
Even if they are men. I think we'd be having a very different conversation, by the way, if this is a man, not a young pregnant girl, a young girl that's just given birth. Even a man who has, it had been suggested, that an Irish citizen who went to fight for ISIS and was captured and imprisoned. You believe he should be allowed back to Ireland? I mean, that's asking for trouble, really, isn't it?
No. Well, actually, if the law says that they come to this country and then they should be brought to justice according to the law of this country, then why should we not allow this to happen? In the meantime, you see, if somebody did something that that is terrible, that is bad, you see, do you want to kill the person or you want to treat
them? Well, I don't think people want to kill them, but they want to leave them there.
Yeah, well, I don't want to leave them there.
They're saying basically you went over there, you made your own bed. If somebody just texts in and says, Niall, I don't agree with Ali. She's made her own bed, let her lie in it. She doesn't seem regretful at all or remorseful.
But if people on the other side are made of 10 people and I can make them 9 or 8, why don't I make them 9 or 8 and then just gain these people on my side, bring them here, educate them in the right way, uproot all the factors that led them to go and join these people. Why? Like, I see it as more or less ideological war more than in war that we see on the ground. I want to gain people's heart. I want to gain people's mind. And if I do that, I will be gaining also their inclination. And that will stop people from going over there. That will weaken the people who are sitting on the other side that will make the number less and less and less. And that's what I want.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hit.